It should have been a foreseeable breakdown, a problem solved by a little preventative maintenance. She could have said more, reached out somehow. But she had been too busy trying to stay afloat those first few days to see that the man who had brought her up to the uptop was slowly unraveling right before her eyes. The flash of her inbox icon interrupted these disturbing thoughts. She reached for the mouse and cursed herself. The large chunk of data she had sent down to mechanical some hours earlier must have been rejected. Maybe it was too much to send at once. But then she saw that it was a message from Scotty, her friend in IT who had supplied the data drive. "Come now," it read. It was an odd request, vague and yet dire, especially for the late hour. Juliet powered down her monitor, grabbed the drive from the computer in case she had more visitors, and briefly considered strapping Marnes's ancient gun around her waist. She stood, went to the key locker, and ran her hand down the soft belt, feeling the indention where the buckle had, for decades, worn into the same spot on the old leather. She thought again of Marnes's terse note and looked to his empty chair. She decided in the end to leave the gun hanging where it was. She nodded to his desk, made sure she had her keys, and hurried out the door. 7. It was 34 levels down to IT. Juliet skipped across the steps so swiftly she had to keep a hand on the inner railing to keep from flying outward into the occasional upbound traffic. She overtook a porter near 6 who was startled from being passed. By the 10th floor she was beginning to feel dizzy from the round and round. She wondered how Holston and Marnes had ever responded to trouble with any degree of urgency. The other two deputy stations, the one in the mids and the one in the down deep, were nicely situated near the dead center of their 48 floors, a far superior arrangement. She passed into the 20s thinking about this, that her office was not ideally positioned to respond to the far edge of her precinct. Instead, it had been located by the airlock and the holding cell, close to the highest form of the silo's capital punishment. Her legs cursed this decision as she considered the long slog back up. In the high 20s, she practically bowled a man over who wasn't watching where he was going. She wrapped one arm around him and gripped the railing, keeping them both from a nasty tumble. He apologized while she swallowed a curse. And then she saw it was Lucas, his lapboard strapped to his back, nubs of charcoal sticking out of his coveralls.
"Oh," he said, "hello."
He smiled at seeing her, but his lips drooped into a frown when he realized she'd been hurrying the opposite direction. "I'm sorry," she said. I've got to go."
"Of course."
He stood out of the way, and Juliet finally took her hands off his ribs. She nodded, not sure what to say, her thoughts only on Scotty, and then she continued her run down, moving too fast to chance a glance back. When she finally got to 34... she paused on the landing to catch her breath and let the dizziness fade. Checking her coveralls, that her star was in place and the flash drive still in her pocket, she pulled open the main doors to IT and tried to stroll in as if she belonged there. She sized up the entrance room quickly. To her right, a glass window looked into a conference room. The light was on, even though it was now the middle of the night. A handful of heads were visible through the glass, a meeting taking place. She thought she heard Bernard's voice, loud and nasally, leeching through the door. Ahead of her stood the low security gates leading back to IT's labyrinth of apartments, offices, and workshops. Juliet could imagine the floor plan. She'd heard that the three levels shared much in common with mechanical, only without the fun.
"Can I help you?"
a young man in silver coveralls asked from behind the gates. She approached. "Sheriff Nichols," she said. She waved her ID at him, then passed it under the gate's laser scanner. The light turned red, and the gate let out an angry buzz. It did not open. "I'm here to see Scotty, one of your techs." She tried the card again with the same result.
"Do you have an appointment?"
the man asked. Juliet narrowed her eyes at the man. "I'm the sheriff. Since when do I need appointments?" Again with the card, and again the gate buzzed at her. The young man did not move to help.
Please do not do that, he said.
Look, son, I'm in the middle of an investigation here, and you're impeding my progress.
He smiled at her. I'm sure you're familiar with the unique position we maintain here, and that your powers are...
Juliet put her ID away and reached over the gate to grab the straps of his coveralls with both hands. She pulled him almost clear over the gates, her arms bulging with the sinewy muscles that had freed countless bolts. Listen here, you blasted runt. I am coming through these gates, or I'm coming over them, and then through you. I'll have you know that I report directly to Bernard Holland, acting mayor, and your goddamn boss. Do I make myself clear?
The kid's eyes were wide and all pupil. He jerked his chin up and down.
Then move it, she said, letting go of his coveralls with a shove.
He fumbled for his ID, swiped it through the scanner. Juliet pushed through the spinning arms of the turnstile and passed him, then stopped.
Which way, exactly?
The boy was still trying to get his ID back on his chest pocket, his hand trembling.
That-away, ma'am.
He pointed to the right. Second hall, take a left, last office.
Good man, she said.
She turned and smiled to herself. It seemed that the same tone that got bickering mechanics to snap to back home worked here as well. And she laughed to herself to think of the argument she had used. Your boss is also my boss, so open up. But then, with eyes that wide and that much fear in his veins, she could have read him Mama Jean's bread recipe with the same tone and gotten through the gates. This was a skill to remember. She took the second hallway, passing by a man and woman in IT silver as they both walked the other way. They turned to watch her pass. At the end of the hall, she found offices on both sides and didn't know which one was Scotty's. She peeked first into the one with the open door, but the lights were off. She turned to the other one and knocked. There was no answer at first, but the light at the bottom of the door dimmed, as if someone had walked across it.
Who's there?
A familiar voice whispered through the door.
Open this damn thing, Juliet said. You know who this is.
The lever dipped, the door clicking open. Juliet pushed her way inside, and Scotty shoved the door closed behind her, engaging the lock.
Were you seen?
He asked.
She looked at him incredulously. Was I seen? Of course I was seen. How do you think I got in? There are people everywhere.
But did they see you come in here?
He whispered.
Scotty, what the hell is going on? Juliet was beginning to suspect she had hurried all this way for nothing. You sent me a wire, which already seemed desperate enough, but you told me to come now, so here I am.
Where did you get this stuff?
He asked. Scotty grabbed a spool of printout from his desk and held it in trembling hands. Juliet stepped beside him. She placed a hand on his arm and looked at the paper.
Just calm down, she said quietly.
She tried to read a few lines and immediately recognized the gibberish she had sent to Mechanical earlier that day.
How did you get this? She asked. I just wired this to Knox a few hours ago.
Scotty nodded.
And he wired it to me, but he shouldn't have. I can get into a lot of trouble for this.
Juliet laughed. You're kidding, right?
She saw that he wasn't.
Scotty, you're the one who pulled all this stuff for me in the first place.
She stepped back and looked hard at him.
Wait, you know what this nonsense is, right? You can read it.
He bobbed his head.
Jules, I didn't know what I was grabbing for you at the time. It was gigs of crap. I didn't look at it. I just grabbed it and passed it on.
Why is this so dangerous? She asked.
I can't even talk about it, Scotty said. I'm not cleaning material, Jules. I'm not.
He held out the scroll.
Here, I shouldn't have even printed it. But I wanted to delete the wire. You've got to take it. Get it out of here. I can't be caught with it.
Juliet took the scroll, but just to calm him down.
Scotty, sit down. Please. Look, I know you're scared, but I need you to sit and talk to me about this. It is very important.
He shook his head.
Scotty, sit the hell down right now!
She pointed at the chair, and Scotty numbly obeyed. Juliet sat on the corner of his desk and noted that the cot at the back of the room had recently been slept on, and felt pity for the young man.
Whatever this is, she shook the roll of paper, it's what caused the last two cleanings.
She told him this like it was more than a rapidly forming theory, like it was something she knew. Maybe it was the fear in his eyes that cemented the idea, or the need to act strong and sure to help calm him down.
Scotty,
I need to know what it is. Look at me. He did. Do you see this star? She flicked it with her finger, causing a dull ring. He nodded. I'm not your shift foreman anymore, lad. I'm the law, and this is very important. Now, I don't know if you're aware of this, but you can't get into any trouble for answering my questions. In fact, you're obligated to answer them. He looked up at her with a twinge of hope. He obviously didn't know that she was making this up. Not lying. She would never turn Scotty in for all the silo, but she was pretty sure there was no such thing as immunity, not for anyone. What am I holding? She asked, waving the scroll of printout.
It's a program, he whispered.
You mean like a timing circuit? Like a...
No. For a computer. A programming language. It's a...
He looked away.
I don't want to say... Oh, Jules, I just want to go back to mechanical. I want none of this to have happened.
Those words were like a splash of cold water. Scotty was more than frightened. He was terrified. For his life. Juliet got off the desk and crouched beside him, placed her hand on the back of his hand, which rested on his anxiously bouncing knee. What does the program do? She asked. He bit his lip and shook his head.
It's okay. We're safe here. Tell me what it does. It's for a display, he finally said. But not for like a readout or an LED or a dot matrix. There are algorithms in here I recognize. Anyone would...
He paused.
64-bit color, he whispered, staring at her. 64-bit. Why would anyone need that much color?
Dumb it down for me, Juliet said. Scotty seemed on the verge of going mad.
You've seen it, right? The view up top?
She dipped her head. You know where I work.
Well, I've seen it too, back before I started eating every meal in here, working my fingers to the bone.
He rubbed his hands up through his shaggy, sandy brown hair.
This program, Jules, what you've got, it could make something like that wall screen look real.
Juliet digested this, then laughed. But wait, isn't that what it does? Scotty, there are sensors out there. They just take the images they see, and then the screen has to display the view, right? I mean, you've got me confused here. She shook the printed scroll of gibberish. Doesn't this just do what I think it does, put the image on the display? Scotty wrung his hands together.
You wouldn't need anything like this. You're talking about passing an image through. I could write a dozen lines of code that do that. No, this is about making images. It's more complex.
He grabbed Juliet's arm.
Jules, this thing can make brand new views. It can show you anything you like.
He sucked in his breath, and a slice of time hung in the air between them, a pause where hearts did not beat and eyes did not blink. Juliet sat back on her haunches, balancing on the toes of her old boots. She finally settled her butt to the floor and leaned back against the metal paneling of his office wall.
So now, you see,
Scotty started to say, but Juliet held up her hand, hushing him. It never occurred to her that the view could be fabricated. But why not? And what would be the point? She imagined Holston's wife discovering this. She must have been at least as smart as Scotty. She was the one who came up with the technique he had used to find this in the first place, right? What would she have done with this discovery? Say something out loud and cause a riot? Tell her husband, the sheriff, what? Juliet could only know what she herself would do in that position if she were almost convinced. She was, by nature, too curious a person to doubt what she might do. It would gnaw at her, like the rattling innards of a sealed machine, or the secret workings of an unopened device. She would have to grab a screwdriver and a wrench and have a peek.
Jules!
She waved him off. Details from Holston's folder flooded back. Notes about Allison, how she suddenly went crazy almost out of nowhere. Her curiosity must have driven her there. Unless Holston didn't know. Unless it was all an act. Unless Allison had been shielding her husband from some horror with a mock veil of insanity. But would it have taken Holston 3 years to piece together what she had figured out in a week? Or did he already know, and it just took 3 years to summon the courage to go after her? Or did Juliet have an advantage he hadn't? She had Scotty, and she was, after all, following the breadcrumbs of someone else following more breadcrumbs, a much easier and more obvious trail. She looked up at her young friend, who was peering worriedly down at her.
"You have to get those out of here," he said, glancing at the printouts.
Juliet nodded. She pushed up from the floor and tucked the scroll into the breast of her coveralls. It would have to be destroyed. She just wasn't sure how.
"I deleted my copies of everything I got for you," he said. "I am done looking at them, and you should do the same."
Juliet tapped her chest pocket, felt the hard bulge of the flash drive there.
"And Jules, can you do me a favor?"
"Anything."
"See if there's any way I can transfer back to mechanical, will you? I don't want to be up here anymore."
She nodded and squeezed his shoulder. "I'll see what I can do," she promised, feeling a knot in her gut for getting the poor kid involved at all. 8. Juliet arrived late at her desk the next morning, exhausted, her legs and back sore from the late climb down to IT and from not getting an ounce of sleep. She had spent the entire night tossing and turning, wondering if she'd discovered a box that was better left unopened, worried she might be raising questions that promised nothing but bad answers. If she went out into the cafeteria and looked in a direction she normally avoided, she would be able to see the last two cleaners lying in the crook of a hill, almost as if in one another's arms. Did those two lovers throw themselves into the rotting wind over the very thing Juliet was now chasing? The fear that she'd seen in Scotty's eyes made her wonder if she wasn't being careful enough. She looked across her desk at her new deputy, greener even at this job than she, as he transcribed data from one of the folders.
"Hey, Peter?"
He looked up from his keyboard.
"Yeah?"
"You were in justice before this, right? Shadowing with a judge?" He tilted his head to the side.
"No, I was a court assistant. I actually shadowed in the Mid's deputy office until a few years ago. I wanted that job, but none came up."
"Did you grow up there, or the up top?"
"The Mid's."
His hands fell away from his keyboard to his lap. He smiled.
"My dad was a plumber in the hydroponics. He passed away a few years ago. My mom, she works in the nursery."
"Really? What's her name?"
"Rebecca? She's one of the..."
"Oh, I know her. She was shadowing when I was a kid. My father..."
"He works in the upper nursery. I know. I didn't want to say anything."
"Why not? Hey, if you're worried about me playing favorites, I'm guilty. You're my deputy now, and I'll have your back."
"No, it's not just that. I just didn't want you to hold anything against me. I know you and your father don't..."
Juliet waved him off. "He's still my father. We just grew apart. Tell your mom I said hi."
"I will."
Peter smiled and bent over his keyboard. "Hey, I've got a question for you, something I can't figure."
"Sure," he said, looking up. "Go ahead."
"Can you think of why it's cheaper to porter a paper note to someone than it is to just wire them from a computer?"
"Oh, sure," he nodded. "It's a quarter chip per character to wire someone. That adds up."
Juliet laughed. "No, I know what it costs. But paper isn't cheap either, and neither is porting. But it seems like sending a wire would be practically free, you know? It's just information. It weighs nothing."
He shrugged. "It's been a quarter chit of character since I've been alive. I don't know. Besides, we've got a 50 chit per day allowance from here, plus unlimited emergencies. I wouldn't stress."
"I'm not stressed, just confused. I mean, I understand why everyone can't have radios like we carry, because only one person can transmit at a time, so we need the air open for emergencies, but you'd think we could all send and receive as many wires as we wanted." Peter propped his elbows up and rested his chin on his fists.
"Well, think about the cost of the servers, the electricity. That means oil to burn and all the maintenance of the wires and cooling and whatnot, especially if you have a ton of traffic. Factor that against pressing pulp on a rack, letting it dry, scratching some ink on it, and then having a person who's already headed that way walk it up or down for you. No wonder it's cheaper.
Juliet nodded, but mostly for his benefit. She wasn't so sure. She hated to voice why, but she couldn't help herself. But what if it's for a different reason? What if someone made it expensive on purpose?
What, to make money? Peter snapped his fingers. To keep the porters employed with running notes.
Juliet shook her head. No. What if it's to make conversing with each other more difficult? Or at least costly, you know, separate us, make us keep our thoughts to ourselves.
Peter frowned. Why would anyone want to do that?
Shrugging, Juliet looked back at her computer screen, her hand creeping to the scroll hidden in her lap. I don't know, she said. Forget about it. It's just a silly thought. She pulled her keyboard toward her and was just glancing up at her screen when Peter saw the emergency icon first.
Wow, another alert, he said.
She started to click on the flashing icon, heard Peter blow out his breath.
What the hell's going on around here?
She pulled the message up on her screen and read it quickly, disbelieving. Surely this wasn't the way of the job. Surely people didn't die this often, her just not hearing about it because her nose was always in some crankcase or under an oil pan. The blinking number code above the message was one she recognized without even needing her cheat sheet. It became sadly familiar. Another suicide. They didn't give the victim's name, but there was an office number. And she knew the floor and address. Her legs were still sore from her trip down there. No, she said, gripping the edge of her desk.
You want me to...
Peter reached for his radio. No, damn it, no! Juliet shook her head. She pushed away from her desk, knocking over the recycling bin, which spilled out all the pardon folders across the floor. The scroll from her lap rolled into them.
I can...
Peter began. I got this, she said, waving him away. Damn it! She shook her head. The office was spinning around her head, the world getting blurry. She staggered for the door, arms wide for balance, when Peter snapped back to his computer screen, dragging his mouse with its little cord behind, clicking something.
Juliet?
But she was already stumbling out the door, bracing herself for the long and painful descent.
Juliet!
She turned to find Peter running behind her, his hand steadying the radio attached to his hip. What? She asked.
I'm sorry, it's... I don't know how to do this.
Spit it out, she said impatiently. All she could think of was little Scotty, hanging by his neck. It was electrical ties in her imagination. That's how her waking nightmare, her morbid thoughts, crafted the scene of his death in her head.
It's just that... I got a private wire and...
Keep up if you want, but I've got to get down there. She spun toward the stairwell. Peter grabbed her arm, roughly, a forceful grip.
I'm sorry, ma'am, but I'm supposed to take you into custody.
She whirled on him and saw how unsure of himself he looked. What did you say?
I'm just doing my duty, Sheriff, I swear.
Peter reached for his metal cuffs. Juliet stared at him, disbelieving, as he snapped one link around her wrist and fumbled for the other. Peter, what's going on? I've got a friend I need to see to... He shook his head.
The computer says you're a suspect, ma'am. I'm just doing what it tells me to do.
And with that, the second link clicked around her other wrist, and Juliet looked down at her predicament, dumbfounded, the image of her young friend hanging by his neck, unable to be shaken loose from her mind. 9. She was allowed a visitor, but who would Juliet want to see her like this? No one. So she sat with her back against the bars, the bleak view outside brightening with the rising of an unseen sun, the floor around her bare of folders and ghosts. She was alone, stripped of a job she wasn't sure she ever wanted, a pile of bodies in her wake, her simple and easily understood life having come unraveled.
I'm sure this will pass,
a voice behind her said. Juliet leaned away from the steel rods and looked around to find Bernard standing behind her, his hands wrapped around the bars. Juliet moved away from him and sat on the cot, turning her back to the gray view. "You know I didn't do this," she said. "He was my friend." Bernard frowned.
"What do you think you're being held for? The boy committed suicide. He seems to have been distraught from recent tragedies. This is not unheard of when people move to a new section of the silo, away from friends and family, to take a job they're not entirely suited for."
"Then why am I being held here?" Juliet asked. She realized suddenly that there may be no double cleaning after all. Off to the side, down the hallway, she could see Peter shuffling back and forth like some physical barrier prevented him from coming any closer.
"Unauthorized entry on the 34th, Bernard said. "Threatening a member of the silo, tampering with IT affairs, removing IT property from secured quarters."
"That's rat shit," Juliet said. "I was summoned by one of your workers. I had every right to be there."
"We will look into that," Bernard said. "Well, Peter, here will. I'm afraid he's had to remove your computer for evidence. My people down below are best qualified to see if..."
"Your people? Are you trying to be the mayor or IT head? Because I looked into it and the pact clearly states you can't be both."
"That will be put to vote soon enough. The pact has changed before. It's designed to change when events call for it."
"And so you want me out of the way?" Juliet stepped closer to the bar so she could see Peter Billings and have him see her.
"I suppose you were here to have this job all along, is that right?"
Peter slunk out of sight.
"Juliet. Jules."
Bernard shook his head and clicked his tongue at her.
"I don't want you out of the way. I wouldn't want that for any member of the silo. I want people to be in their place. Where they fit in. Scotty wasn't cut out for IT, I see that now. And I don't think you were meant for the up-top."
"So what, I'm banished back to mechanical? Is that what's going on? Over some rat shit charges?"
"Banished is such a horrible word. I'm sure you didn't mean that. And don't you want your old job back? Weren't you happier then? There's so much to learn up here that you've never shadowed for. And the people who thought you best fit for this job, who I'm sure hoped to ease you into it..."
He stopped right there, and it was somehow worse that he left the sentence open like that, forcing Jules to complete the image rather than just hear it. She pictured two mounds of freshly turned soil in the gardens, a few morning rinds tossed on top of them.
"I'm going to let you gather your things, what isn't needed for evidence, and then allow you to see yourself back down. As long as you check in with my deputies on the way and report your progress, we'll drop these charges. Consider it an extension of my little forgiveness holiday."
Bernard smiled and straightened his glasses. Juliet gritted her teeth. It occurred to her that she had never, in her entire life, punched someone in the face. And it was only her fear of missing, of not doing it correctly and cracking her knuckles on one of the steel bars, that prevented her from putting an end to that streak. It was just about a week since she had arrived at the up-top, and Juliet was leaving with fewer belongings than she'd brought. A blue mechanical coverall had been provided, one much too big for her. Peter didn't even say goodbye. Juliet thought it was more out of shame than anger or blame. He walked her through the cafeteria to the top of the stairs, and as she turned to shake his hand, she found him staring down at his toes, his thumbs caught in his overalls, her sheriff's badge pinned at an angle over his left breast.